there. This is Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley. It's a podcast about making things up and making things happen. I love talking to creative people. And today, my guest is photographer Mike Ruiz. I've known Mike since the early 90s. We were sent together to Vancouver for Detour Magazine to do a feature on the set of the movie Fear with Mark Wahlberg, Reese Witherspoon, and Alyssa Milano. We were traveling together. We may have stayed in the same room. I don't remember. We did these interviews. He took these pictures, and we ended up, you know, becoming friendly after that. And he actually shot my album cover in, like, 99, 2000. And every time I see him around all these years, he's always warm and friendly and delightful. And his work is super cool and sexy. And he's also a personality that you may have seen on shows like America's Next Top Model or RuPaul's Drag Race. He was on the A-List, that gay reality show, for a while. We talk about that. So Mike Ruiz has always been in this kind of glamorous, fabulous world. He always looks amazing and fit. And yet he's always been super, super sweet. Like, he is such a sweetheart. And those two things don't always go together. And I think that's what makes him so original. And the reason we're connecting now is he directed the music video for Vanessa Williams' new single, Legs. And I saw it online. Somebody dropped, like, a tweet that said, Vanessa Williams has a new single, and I clicked on it, and she looks fierce. I've always been a fan of Vanessa Williams. She's singing the song called Legs, where the chorus is, the legs are the last to go. She's just talking about, like, I still look fierce. I'm going to keep dancing. It's about sort of empowering people of a certain age to just keep being fabulous. And there's such a spirit about the video that just, you know, I'm at that age where I'm like, am I done yet or do I still want to dance? I guess I want to dance. Like, it really spoke to me. And so I've been sharing it with all my friends, and I shared it with my jazz dance teacher, and he was like, we have to do a combination to this. So I think I liked something on Instagram or whatever, and Mike responded, and he goes, thank you for liking the video. Like, he reached out to me right away, and then we started this conversation, and now we did this interview because, you know what? It's a Vanessa-sance, and Mike is the architect of the Vanessa-sance. But before we get to the interview, I want to remind you that this podcast, Dennis Anyone, is brought to you by me. I do it because I love it. And if you like it too and you want to keep it going, there are two things you can do. You can go to DennisAnyone.net and click on donate, and you can leave a tip in my virtual tip jar. And a listener named Jason Z did that this week, and I really, really appreciate it. It helps me cover my expenses and feels really good. It reminds me that people are listening and enjoying, which I really appreciate. Or you could become a subscriber to DNR Studios. I'm part of a group of shows in the Derek and Romaine stable. We're kind of like prostitutes, and they're the madams or whatever. And for a monthly fee, you get my show early, and you get all these other great gay shows. And you can learn about that at dnrstudios.com. All right, that's enough of the plugs. Here now is the interview with photographer Mike Ruiz. Joining me now from New Jersey, it's Mike Ruiz, photographer, music video director. He's also one of the driving forces behind the online magazine Photo Book. He's the creative director. He's the co-owner. You wear a lot of hats, Mike, and it's so great to see you. Welcome to the podcast.
I should be wearing a hat now because I'm having a bad hair day.
Oh, if I would kill for your worst hair day, I would kill for it. I'd kill for your worst anything day. Michael,
hi, Dennis. How are you?
We've known each other since 94. Is that right?
Yeah, it's 30 years.
I know. 30. And I feel like it's a love story that just goes decades without touching base. But when you responded to, I think I liked your Vanessa Williams video or something, and you reached out, and I was like, it's Mike Ruiz, everybody. I got very excited.
I'm so happy to see your like on my Instagram page.
Right, because you are spearheading the Vanessa Williams comeback we've all been needing and loving, and it's happening with this music video for Legs, which I fell in love with. Somebody dropped it and they're like, this just came out 2 seconds ago, and I watched it and I was like sending it to friends, and I was so into it. So cool. Talk to me about the Vanessa project, and then we'll get into our history and other things.
You know, I've been friends with Vanessa for a long time. I her last round of music in 2009.
Yeah.
I directed all the music videos for that project, and I did a bunch of the press around that. But so then, she's been doing her own thing for years and years and years, and I nothing that I could collaborate on.
Right.
So we hadn't spoken for a very long time, but then for, like with Photo Book, I mean, the success of Photo Book is largely in part due to my relationships that I have with people, my longstanding relationships. So I literally have been reaching out to like all my friends for the past like year and a half. You know, people that I've worked with and like, hey, you want to do my magazine? So that's actually how we kind of fast tracked the success of it. But anyway, I asked Vanessa to do it back in November of last year.
Right.
She mentioned that she had some music coming out and she's like, hey, do you want to hear it? And you want to direct the video? And it's like, oh, okay. You know, it'll be like a sweet ballad and you know, I'd be down for
it. Yeah. It's going to be Save the Best for Last, part two.
Right. But then she sent me the track and I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah.
It's like a throwback to old disco. It's, you know, it's like an anthem-y kind of thing. It's like pop. I mean, it's, you know, high energy, like it's, you know, everything that I'm about. So, and, you know, it's about like, you know, being tenacious in life and, you know,
yeah.
being like not, you know, dying out like the dinosaurs. So, you know, that all speaks to me because I'm like the same age as she is. So, once I heard the track, it's a long winded answer. When I heard the track, I was like, oh, wow, like I really want to do this. So I had all these ideas and I pitched them to her and she loved them. And then we shot the video. It just sort of like snowballed into this whole thing. And what was the question again?
We're talking about the Vanessa Sons. I'm calling it the Vanessa Sons.
Yeah, so and then she told me she has like seven other tracks coming out over the you know, next several months. So I shot all the cover art for that. And, you know, so it's turned. And now, like, I mean, I don't know if you've seen, but it's wildly successful. I mean, the New York Times, you're like everyone is like covering it. Like I thought, oh, it's, you know, like, I mean, I knew the song and I predicted this and it's in writing somewhere. I predicted that this was going to be like a pop culture moment to remember.
Right. Well, the song is called Legs and the refrain is the legs are the last to go, which is something that people say a lot when as beautiful women grow older, their legs are, you know, the Tina Turner of it all, right? And I love that Vanessa's leaning into that. Yeah, yes. And I'm going to keep dancing. And there's something very empowering about that because as a gentleman of a certain age, you kind of, sometimes you look around and you're like, am I over? Is it done? Can I still do stuff? Right. You know, and I think this video is very inspiring in that way because she looks amazing. Her moves are amazing. I'm particularly partial to the moves in the camouflage pants that are a little more hard-edged hip-hop. I feel like she's killing those. She's got the glamorous sort of Broadway kind of jazz look happening. You've got Michael Urie in the limo. It's just, you know what? There's a joy that comes through in it. Like, she looks like she's having a great time. And I think maybe that's why it's captured people's imagination.
Like, I knew a whole wave of stuff was coming when, back in November, when I said, oh, we should do a shoot. You know, we should do a shoot for my magazine. And she showed up in the studio and she looked like she was a size zero. And I mean, she looks better than she ever has. And I've worked with her for 15 years,
right.
You know, like she looked incredible, but to me, she looks like beyond like anything that she's ever looked before. So when she walked into the studio, I'm like, oh my God, this is like, I got a little like, you know, I got a sense that something was coming. And then she started talking about the music. And then I heard it, and now, of course, it's all happening. I mean, like, everyone is losing their minds over this. Like, the kids, you know, not only you know, us old-timey gay guys, but everybody.
Yeah.
Like, all these people are like, I've gotten all these new followers on Instagram just from, you know, the posts that she's been making and tagging me in. And a lot of them, like, it's everybody from, like, Elton John to, like, Lee Daniels to, like, you know, all these like people, and then all these kids, like all these like young kids who are like super revved up and they're like, oh, I'm putting this in my playlist with Ariana and Dua Lipa. And, you know, so she's, you know, she definitely has a competitive edge, you know, and she has like the experience and the longevity.
Yeah. And she, in the video, she's just kind of, her subtext in the eyes is, I know I look fabulous. I know I look fucking fabulous. I can't believe it. And neither can you. And let's dance. Like, it's kind of awesome. Right. I remember her, loving her from Miss America. She was one of the first celebrities I ever saw when I moved to Los Angeles. I first got here, like, it was the fall of 86. And I was in this musical theater workshop and one of the gals in the workshop with me knew her. And so we got to go to a Halloween party where she was. and she was dressed as Pebbles Flintstone. And I got up the nerve to ask her to dance because there was a dance floor. And she turned me down gently. She sort of said, no, I'm taking a break, but thank you. She was sweet about it. But what made me think I could ask Vanessa Williams to dance? Like, I look back on that and go, like, that was plausible that I would just be like, hey, you want to dance? I guess it is. Like, you got to go for it, right? Looking back, I'm a little cringe about it. But she was nice, although we did not dance. It would have been a better story if we danced, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, for the one dance that you know, that turned you down, I'm sure you've had plenty.
Sure.
You know, I mean,
I did dance. Like I've danced with Sandra Bullock. I have danced with Laura Palmer from Twin Peaks to Groove Is in the Heart at a movie night party. So you know what? She could have been in that company, but I guess not. Guess not.
Yeah.
You snooze, I mean, you lose.
I think it's a good metaphor for how we've like conducted our careers. Like, you know, like I've been asking people to dance. Like, you know how I started is I used to go up to people at the gym and tell them that I was a photographer and, you know, like celebrities and stuff at Gold's Gym in Hollywood. And, you know, most of them called security on me, but you know, a couple of them panned out and they're like, sure, you know, like let's do a photo shoot. And, I met some great people and that's literally like, I've been faking it till I made it.
So you made it. We met in 1994. We were sent to Vancouver together to do a story for Detour Magazine about the movie Fear, which at that time was called No Fear. It's Mark Wahlberg, Reese Witherspoon, Alyssa Milano. And Detour didn't send people places. I had been writing for them for a while. I wrote for free for them for years. I think I might have written for free on this story. And then finally they got some money and they started paying people and it worked out. But I guess they got pitched by the producer, let's do this movie. So we flew up to Vancouver. It was you and I, you were the photographer. I'd never met you. And we did this, I did interviews. You did pictures. What do you remember about that trip?
I just remember that it was so like, it was awkward. Like it was really awkward for me because we were on set and you know, it's one thing if there was a designated spot or time for a photo shoot, but there was like, we had to do it on the fly. So, you know, it's awkward for me. That's not my thing. Like I need to have everything set up.
Right. And so you didn't really have a set. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So I felt like, I mean, I met you and that's the amazing thing that came out of it. But honestly, I don't have really fond memories of that trip.
I feel like we went to see Interview with a Vampire. Did we share a room? I think we might've shared a room. Did they put us up together?
Oh,
I don't remember. Anyway,
we did something. I mean, we totally bonded.
Yeah, we had a good time. And I have this picture that you took of me with Reese Witherspoon, like on a ladder or something. And anyway, yeah.
You still have that? Because I can't find that. I've been looking for because I just saw something on Fear, like the something anniversary of it, and I haven't. I was looking for those images, and I can't find them.
I have all the Detour magazines, so I will find them and I will send them to you or scan them or whatever. I have all those magazines. And the other, I remember you shot me for some promotional thing. I went to your apartment in Hollywood and my roommate Tony came with me and you also shot pictures of him in Angel Wings. Do you remember any of this? This was like a Hollywood apartment.
I've got those Angel Wings on a lot of people, but I don't.
Those Angel Wings have been busier than a Victoria's Secret Angel Wings.
I don't, you know, like my things are such a blur. Like I can't remember.
It's a lot of clicks, a lot of shutter clicks. And the other thing is you shot my album cover for my album, The Water's Fine. I remember you like squeezed me into the end of another shoot. I rented this kind of old fashioned bathtub and loaded it into my 4Runner and then went there and you shot it and it turned out great. And I was very grateful because you were very sweet and you always like tried to help. You're so sweet. That's the thing. You may look intimidating or big and muscular and handsome and all that, but you're just a teddy bear. So where does that come from?
Partly insecurity and partly fear of not being liked. And also like...
But it's a good quality.
Well, but also like wanting to treat people the way that I want to be treated.
Right.
Which is fundamentally the driving force, you know, and now in hindsight, like I always talk about that, like, you know, like the prime key to success is to be a decent human being. That's what I always tell people when they ask for my advice, how to make it in showbiz. Just be a decent human being.
Well, you work in the fashion world and around the fashion world, and there's a lot of airs that get put up put on in that world, but you've never been snobby to me. I've never thought you never seem like a snob, like going up to people in the gym and saying, can I shoot you? Like, how did you feel around that world? Did you feel like a bit different than them? Cause there is a lot of pretentiousness, right?
Yeah. I've always felt like an outsider. No matter how successful I became, I don't know what it is. You know what I mean? Like I never felt like I was part of that collective mindset, just because you need a certain amount of ruthlessness to, you know?
Right.
And which was pretty apparent in a lot of people, but, I couldn't, you know, I'd probably be like a billionaire, you know, if I could suck it up.
If you could be a little more ruthless, if you could be more ruthless.
Yeah, to be a little more ruthless, but I can't, you know, that's why like my whole life's pivoted and now all I do is like animal rescue.
Right. I've noticed that on your
amount of empathy.
I've noticed you have an unhealthy amount of empathy. You think?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I have a very, I'm high on the spectrum of empathy.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good quality. And I've noticed in your post that you do a lot of stuff for PETA and you have your Hunks and Hounds. Is that your calendar that you do?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you pick the dogs to go with the hunks in Hunks and Hounds? Is it competitive? Are they all trying to psych each other out?
The dogs?
Yeah. Are they playing to
well,
win?
No. See, the guys are, the models are, but the dogs are all very like chill and sweet and gentle. And they're all dogs from whatever particular rescue the calendar is benefiting that year, because I benefit a different rescue every year. The dogs are from that rescue.
From that particular rescue, and they interact with the models. How many years have you done that?
This past year was 10 years. So
wow.
this one that I'm producing now is going to be 11 years.
Amazing. You've done so much good, raised so much money, and the pictures are amazing. Is it fun to match the model to the dog? You're like, that's going to look good with this guy.
Yeah. I mean, I do, but I don't, I consider more the personality combination.
Yeah.
And also like my top consideration on those shoots is, I mean, I'm very considerate of the models, but you know, the dogs have all been traumatized and they've all been through hell. And so like my consideration is that the dogs are relaxed and calm and not nervous around somebody. So I kind of gauge how I'm going to pair people up with the dogs based on how the dogs respond to any particular person.
Right. You want them to have a chill, glamorous moment in front of the camera in the spotlight.
So basically I let the dogs decide.
Leave it to the dogs. When did you first remember taking pictures? What was your entry into photography?
Probably 1993.
Yeah.
That's when I got a camera.
Who gave it to you?
A friend of mine who's like, you've got to find a path in life because you're flailing. And he was actually always very supportive. He's a friend of mine and he got me this camera and, strangely, I never had any inclination prior to that. You know, like I wasn't, you know, and I was around it all the time because I was a model for 10 years prior to that. And I couldn't have been less interested in asking the photographers any technical questions or anything. Like I was completely disinterested, but something happened when I got that camera. I just, literally started photographing everything.
Like I love it. How old would you have been?
I was 93. I was 29. Like that, I opened that box. It was like an epiphany, and I literally it was like 24/7. I was shooting. So like my career just started happening pretty immediately. Like Detour actually was one of the first people to publish me, and they were very supportive.
Yeah,
they're very instrumental in like a lot of stuff that I did subsequently.
Detour is kind of amazing to me. I still don't know quite how all the sausage is made because like some at the beginning I wrote for free and then they got some money in there. And then years later I ended up writing for Flaunt a little bit and I had to ask, hey, can I get some money for this? And they're like, here's $100. Like, but they still exist. Like they were still doing gorgeous magazines. Like if someday there's going to be a big Vanity Fair expose on the whole thing of it and it'll be fascinating, but I didn't ask too many questions, but great chance to do my thing. I got to write long interviews with people that I admired and they ran them and the parties were fabulous. Remember magazine parties in the 90s?
He still has those. He still has those parties.
Yeah, amazing. I hear,
evidently. I know.
I fell off the guest list. Although I did write for Flaunt like 4 or 5 years ago. But yeah, you went from getting a camera to writing for a magazine or doing pictures for a magazine within like a year.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. It was pretty instant. And, but then, you know, once I made it, a decision to make it a career, then I worked my ass off. Like, it's not like, oh, I just looked down on my lap and, you know, it was smooth sailing. I mean, there was a lot of hard knocks and a lot of rejection and, you know, because then the reality set in. You know, when I wasn't really looking for it and a shoot would come up here and a shoot would come up there, you know, it all seemed like so easy. But you know, when you're like, okay, I need to make a living at this and I need to work consistently and I need to work like every other day at least, you know, that's when the reality sets in.
Yeah, well,
yeah, I actually have to work my ass off at this.
You're a hustler.
You know, I have really good work ethic, so I worked really hard. And
was there something that you feel like changed the game for you in terms of an opportunity or a job that sort of opened things up bigger, or was it just like a chipping away, a job at a time?
It's still that way. You know, like I would do a big, huge job or work with like a big celebrity and think,
right, you this know, is it. The street. Phone's going to ring. Yeah.
You know, like my first big album cover that I shot was Rod Stewart, and that was in 1997.
Yeah.
You know, like back in those, you know, that was like a huge deal to shoot a Rod Stewart album cover. And I thought, oh, I'm set. I didn't work for 6 months after that.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's like a fickle business, but you know, I mean, if you're tenacious and you're hardworking and you don't take no for an answer.
As magazines started to sort of fade, what did you pivot to?
I'm very malleable. You know what I mean? Yeah. I generate income a lot of different ways. Through syndication, I made a lot of money through a lot of passive income from syndication.
What of your syndicated shots has sold the most or has had the biggest life?
J-Lo.
J-Lo. Interesting.
I shot her twice in 1997 or 98.
Yep.
And I made, like, that shit sold for 10 years after that. Like, and you know, back in the day of syndication, like people paying 15 grand for a cover in Germany, and you know, now it's like a buck or $2 for a cover. But
yeah,
but back in those days, you know, like, oh my God, like J-Lo is like, J-Lo bought me a couple of cars and put a down payment on my house. And
all right,
for a good 10 year period, I didn't do any magazines, I didn't do any editorial. All I did was advertising.
Yeah,
you know, I made a shit ton of money and then it all came to a screeching halt. So fortunately I had that like period where, you know, when I was smart about my finances.
Yeah.
So I'm not a billionaire, but I'm not on Skid Row.
Right. You're doing all right. I'm going to say some of the people that you photographed and just say, tell me what you remember about them. Prince.
Kind of life changing. I mean,
in what way?
Like, I mean, I have to say, and this is my go-to story when people ask me about, like, the highlight of my career. I just, you know, I mean, I grew up, you know, like, idolizing this man who was so up high on a pedestal for me.
Right.
To meet him, and not only to meet him, like, when the first time that I worked with him, they sent 100 portfolios. And he had to be, it was for the cover of Ebony magazine.
Yeah.
And he picked me out of like 100 photographers.
He chose you. That's amazing.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, so that in itself was like, what? So then he flies everyone to Paisley Park. Like he never went to New York to shoot or anything. So he flew everyone to Paisley Park and, you know, I met him and we had a really great shoot. And then he just started requesting me for stuff. And then there was one time we were at Paisley Park and it was just me, my assistant and a writer from Rolling Stone. And he's like, hey, you guys want to hear some new music? And I thought, okay, he's going to put in a cassette or something. Well, he got his band together and he got on stage in his crazy huge performance space. And he did a set. And it was like,
he didn't pop in a demo.
Three of us.
Yeah.
Three of us. Yeah. So, you know, and stuff like that happened like a couple of times. Like I shot all the marketing for his Welcome to America tour.
Yeah.
So he had me as a guest at Madison Square Gardens, like in the VIP thing. And then he called us all up on stage, like me and Whoopi Goldberg and Chris Rock and Kim Kardashian. And we're all dancing on stage at Madison Square Gardens. And he shouts at me. I was like, hey, Mike, you know, so like I'm dancing on stage at a packed house in Madison Square Gardens. And Prince shouts me out. Like to me, that was probably the most, and it's online somewhere. It's on YouTube somewhere.
Wow.
But that was, I mean, I'd say that was probably the most surreal thing to ever happen to me.
Did you talk to him? Like, did you have conversations with him, or was it all sort of business?
Well, no. I mean, you know, we didn't like, you know, I mean, it was very professional. We didn't get intimate or anything.
Very cool. Like,
but he was, you know, he was cool. Like, he would defer to me. Like, once you get past his wall.
Yeah.
He became like a little kid. He's like, hey, Mike, what do you think if we do this? Or how about if we do this? So it's just really, that was another really weird thing that he would be deferring to me that way for like creative anything.
Yeah.
That was cool.
All right. I'm going to throw out a few more names. Dolly Parton.
Oh, she was amazing. She was amazing. She let me sit on her lap.
What?
Yeah. I wanted to do a selfie, so she let me sit on her lap. I have a picture of that. That's on the internet somewhere too.
I love it. So she's everything you want her to be.
She's a totally cool, sweet, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Betty White, you worked with her a few times.
Yeah. Another like amazing, warm, generous of spirit person. Like, she was just, you know, the time I worked with her, she was 92 and then again at 93. And I mean, she was just energetic and sweet and kind. And like, when you spoke with her, like, she looked, you know what I mean? She was present. She wasn't like, which is amazing.
And you have the animal thing in common with her.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't really so aggressively into animal welfare back then, but I certainly, you know, appreciated that she was.
Yeah. That's very cool. Katy Perry.
She's cool. It's very business, you know. Yeah. We did the shoot. We left.
I love it. You've worked a lot with Kathy Griffin.
Yeah, she's a hoot. She continues to be a hoot. She's, you know, just like a friend of mine. You know, like, she's invited me to her dinner parties at her house. You know, she had one. What was it, like a couple of years ago?
Yeah,
like, it was crazy. It was like me and Rosie O'Donnell and Megan Mullally and Jennifer Lewis and Kristen Johnston, you know, and me.
Yeah. So there you go.
It was a pretty like surreal dinner party.
I love it. Who surprised you? Who's different than you thought they would be?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I don't really ever get, you know, I had a feeling we'd talk about this, and I never really get super intimate, you know, like, there's, you know, I did it early on in my career. Like I thought that they were my friends,
right?
And I had my feelings destroyed, you know what I mean? So like, I learned quickly that it's all very amicable and professional and, you know, like, you help me and I'll help you.
Yeah.
And then it's good. You know, I mean, I'm not, that's not a judgment at all. You know, like, I navigated this whole business, in that exact way, but I'm not gonna lie either. It's not like I'm best friends with anybody.
Right.
I'm friendly with them. I go out to dinner with them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's like this strange, like, show busy sort of protocol, and I'm sure you're familiar with
it. Yeah, I relate to this, like, so much.
You know, like, they're cordial and pleasant and nice, and on appearance wise, they look like they could be a really good friend, but. You know, I mean, it's business. It's all business.
It's business in a way. And also, like, with celebrity friendships, they could get canceled like a TV show and you don't even know about it. You were canceled and you find out like months later and you don't know why. It's like that. It was like, I thought we had another season in us. And I'm like, no, I guess I've been canceled. It's very weird. Yeah.
That's happened a few times. It's happened recently. Like, I'm like, I thought things were great. Like, what? You know, like, somebody, you never know. Like, somebody could say, I don't know.
You just don't know. It's a whole thing. And I went a long time without having much to do with celebrities at all. Like, my path went in a different direction. And I remember spending time for some kind of meeting with a kind of B-list celebrity and some of their friends. And I hadn't been around celebrities at all in years. And I went back into that meeting, kind of hangout situation. And I was struck by the way all of the gravity seemed to tilt toward that person. And they weren't even it wasn't Taylor Swift. It wasn't like some gigantic star. It was like somebody that had been on a TV show. But still, they were, did she laugh? Okay, then we're laughing too. Then it's like this, the way the sun shines out of them and everyone else is kind of around. And I hadn't been around it for a while and I was back in it and I was like, oh, I remember this. Not that it's good or bad, but it's a thing.
It's a definite thing. And it's a necessary thing for people to achieve the heights that some people achieve.
Yeah.
You have to be the black hole.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you're giving and giving, you know,
yeah,
you end up in New Jersey, like, you know, doing dog rescue.
But it's good. It's good. You're doing it well and you're doing it great. You've also appeared on camera a number of times in films and reality shows, Top Model, Drag Race. Looking back, what has that part of your career been like? Do you look back and go, gosh, that was fun? What do you think of it?
It was fun.
Were they fun times?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, my whole thing's been fun, you know, and I've always had I've been stressed out and sad and, you know, and bummed out about not getting jobs and stuff, but for the most part, like, I've always been very present and grateful and like, nothing's ever lost on me, you know,
right.
And I never take anything, like, I never take myself too seriously. And I know that I'm just the person like anybody else, but, it's funny. Like I willed those to happen, you know, like I thought, you know what? I feel like being on TV. And then I just would think about it. And you know, or take steps towards it. But that's how I ended up on America's Next Top Model. And then, Drag Race came along and, you know, I was friends with Rue and, They created that photographer challenge on the first episode of every season for me, basically.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, it's pretty cool. Like, you know, like in the scope of like pop culture history, like some of the shows that I've been on have, you know, are like pillars in pop culture history.
Well, and certainly the Ru-universe of it all, the RuPaul universe of it all is so massive. Do people still recognize you from that? Because it's its own thing. It has conventions and all of that. Like, it's its own thing.
And right? I don't do any of that stuff. Like, I don't go to drag. I've never been to drag con. I don't.
Right.
You know, I don't milk it anymore.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, constantly, you know, cause they air those episodes like constantly.
Yeah.
And like three quarters of the people that follow me on Instagram are Drag Race fans.
Yeah. When was the last time were you on it? Has it been recently that you were on it? I've been a little behind on my season.
It's been 10 years.
It's been 10 years.
Like 2014 was the last time I was on.
Yeah. All right. But, you shot some fabulous queens, made it happen. You were on that show, The A-List. What's your favorite memory of that? It was like a reality show that followed fabulous gays around.
Yeah.
Is there a fun moment about it?
Well, it was fun. It was what was fun about it was how I manipulated it.
Ooh, for interesting.
My benefit.
Say more.
I, you know, like I went into it very, you know, I was very conscious about what was going to happen.
Right.
And what the goal was with the producers. And I was very strategic about what I said and what I did, because all I wanted that show for was to give me a platform to do something meaningful.
Mm.
You know, so like every segment that I did, like I would do some celebrity shoots on the show and stuff, like I'd produce my own content basically. But also like I did, you know, I brought the show to the Ali Forney Center and we had round tables and, you know, so like I tried to use it as much as I could for the greater good. And, you know, pretty soon into it, pretty early on into it, they kind of singled me out as that guy because they knew they weren't going to get. And then, so when they were having like big fights in the clubs and stuff, and the producers like, say something, I would just sit there like this and not say a peep because, you know, if you don't talk, they can't use you.
Right.
And I've literally edited out of all of those, like, you know, those like wildly hysterical scenes because, you know, I exercised some restraint.
Right. You knew what you were doing going in and it worked out all right. It worked out all right. When you go into a shoot, like what part really excites you? Cause you've done it for so long. What really still lights you up about taking pictures?
Just the whole creative approach to it. like I still get really excited. Like lately I've had a whole new wave of like creative, like zest for photography. So like, I'm like a little kid again, like, you know, there was a period of time where I was a little jaded and I'm like, okay, let me just get this portrait and be done with it. And,
right.
But now I'm thinking, oh, how about if we build this set and we do this? And, you know, like I spend so much money on these shoots that I don't make any money on just because like I need the creative
right
gratification from it. So, it's doing that. It's like, just, you know, it's like playing dress up. I mean, it's like the ultimate childhood game to play. You know, you dress people up and put makeup on them and make them stand in funny positions. And I mean, you know, and like create like huge, massive celebrities. Like it's all very surreal to me sometimes. Like sometimes I really think if I really stop and think about what I'm doing, like what the hell is going on here? But it's cool. Like I'm so grateful for it.
What are the words and phrases you're likely to use during a shoot when it's going well? Do you say gorgeous a lot? What do you say?
Oh yeah. Yes, I do. I say gorgeous. And I'm like, yes, yes. I say that a lot.
You say yes, yes. That's cool.
That's such a gay thing, but I do. Yes.
I love it.
Y-A-A-A-A-S-S-S-S-S.
What does it mean to you when you make people feel beautiful? Or when you see that they take that in, or they look at a picture of themselves and they go, wow. Like how gratifying is that?
Like the human interest part of what I do, that's the most gratifying thing. Like, and that's my goal ultimately. Like not only if the, you know, they feel like they look good, but like, I always need everyone to leave set feeling better. Like everybody, you know what I mean? Like the assistants, like everybody, like everyone needs to feel good when they leave. Otherwise I feel like I haven't done my job or I failed.
I bet
so
there
that's really important for me.
I bet there are a lot of people in your business who never have thought that ever, not once. Like it's not a concern of theirs, but it's fundamental for you.
Yeah, I mean it is. I mean, but you know, a lot of it comes from working in front of the camera.
Yeah,
being yelled at and degraded and humiliated and objectified and hashtag Me Too'd and all of that. I learned that if I was ever in a position, you know, if I was ever on the other side of it, that I would make it my primary concern to, you know, to be respectful and considerate and to have people feel good when they leave, you know, my presence and my shoot. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I get cranky sometimes. Sometimes
sure.
I get stressed out, but like I'm always the first one to apologize and I'm always, you know, and it doesn't happen a lot. I mean, 99% of the time, people always leave shoots feeling great.
Right.
But you know, not Mother Teresa either.
You know, right, of course. But it is something you think about. It's something that's on your
100%.
Mind for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
You talked about your modeling days. When you read these big exposés that come out about Bruce Weber, whoever it is, are you like, yep, not surprised at all? Like, yeah.
No. I mean, I've been in situations like that.
Yeah.
Like I've been like put upon by, you know, sexually put upon by people that, you know, unwanted advances and, you know, so,
and
you know, I know I'm, I had firsthand experience with it. So yeah, it's not surprising at all. You know, it's not surprising how people, that's the other thing too, that I've taken away. Like I work with like beautiful guys and beautiful gay men.
Yeah.
And they're all flirty because they, you know, like it behooves them to be. And like, I'm in a position to really be exploitative, but I have never once in 30 years have ever crossed the line. Even if someone was hitting on me hard, like to me, I can't do it. And not in that context.
When it would happen back in the day, how would you handle it? Cause it was like, you don't want to lose the job. You don't want to blow your career, but you don't like, you're really screwed.
Well, that's the thing, you know, back in those days, like it was protocol.
Right.
Like that was the protocol. It's not like, what should I do? It's like, this is what I have to do in order, you know, I have to do A in order to get B.
Right.
And you did it.
Yeah.
You know, it was different for men too, you know, like it wasn't as like, you know, like men tend to not, well, I mean, I can't speak for everyone else, but I never felt, you know, it was like sex, you know what I mean? Like, it was like, oh, you know, like this guy's grossing me out, but whatever, you know, like I'll make out with him. So I get the job, you know, like I didn't think of it like deeper than that.
Right.
And it never scarred me in any way, but in hindsight, like it could have.
And also it scarred you enough that you made sure not to be that way. You know what I mean? Like it left enough of an impression that you were like, that is not going to be the tone of what I create. That's interesting. I have watched you since I first met you, and the way you have changed your body over the years and worked out and almost like treating it like a work of art. Is that how you have seen your fitness or your bodybuilding? Like, it feels like you're creating something. It doesn't just feel like I like to go to the gym. It's like you're creating something.
Hey, that's exactly how I look at it. I mean, you know, there are like psychological benefits to it, but
sure.
But I think about that a lot. I think like, oh, you know, like I think of it as like sculpting, and you know, it's literally another creative outlet for me. Like I have like a lot of different creative outlets, and I, you know, that's a lot of people don't see the relationship. You know, like either you're a fashion photographer or you work out, or
right.
You're, you know what I mean? Like, so like to be both, it's like people can't wrap their heads around it sometimes.
Right.
But to me, they're like intrinsic to each other. Like they go hand in hand. Like I really feel like one informs the other, you know?
Have there been periods where you just weren't that into it? Or have you always been pretty disciplined? It feels like you've always kind of stuck with it.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't, it's funny, only during the pandemic did I really become like I really saw a huge change in my body, and I realized what I was capable of during the pandemic, because there was like Bette Midler and ruthless people like in the basement, like working out for 5 hours a day.
Right. Oh, so you got really into exercise during the pandemic, as opposed to like,
yeah,
I'm just going to lay on the couch and order DoorDash.
Well, fortunately, living out here in Jersey, you know, I have a little bit of land.
And, yeah.
You know, I set up all these like pulleys and things under my deck, and I was working out under my deck for like 3 hours a day. And like, and it was pretty incredible, like how I was able to change. And that's when I started thinking of it as kind of like a creative outlet, you know, like,
right,
like I can mold like human flesh. And it's pretty cool.
Well, I think there are a lot of people that want to do that, or, and some people that are really disciplined about it, but I look at the picture and I'm like, he chose that. How the fuck does he do it? Like, I'm kind of in awe of it. Is it a lot of time? Is it a lot of commitment? Is it a lot of sacrifice? Or do you just know what you're doing?
It's a lot of time. It's definitely a commitment, but it's not a sacrifice.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it provides me a lot. Like this morning I woke up and I was like so stressed out because I have all this stuff going on. And I know that all I have to do is go to the gym for a couple of hours, and I release a lot of that angst. and that kind of helps me get through the rest of the day. I really embrace it. I look forward to doing it.
Yeah.
And I get a lot out of it.
Right. It's a release for you. It's like a kind of therapy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it. Where's the weirdest place you've ever been recognized from somebody that saw you on TV or the print ads or?
I was in Cairo.
Funny. Oh, wow.
I was in Cairo and I was having dinner and I was on my phone looking at all the pictures that I'd taken that day. And then I get like an Instagram notice, and I look on Instagram and there's a picture of me in the restaurant that I was eating at in Cairo at the back of my head. And they had tagged me.
They knew it was you from the back of your
head. Mike Ruiz is sitting like right there for, and he tags me. So I'm like turning around like, that was strangest.
That is,
I mean, just the most unexpected place. It wasn't weird or strange or anything.
Yeah, it's just just kind of surreal, right? Like it's happening in real time. Where were you born? Were you from Canada originally? Did I dream that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Born and raised in Montreal.
Yeah. So do you speak French?
Mm-hmm.
I love it. When did you come to the States?
In 1987.
And what brought you here?
Dreams of a better life.
Dreams of a better life. So photography was not on your radar at all as a kid. Like, what captured your imagination growing up?
Studio 54. Like, all I did was fantasize about being at Studio 54, like from the age of like 12. As soon as Studio 54 hit, like all literally I became consumed with Studio 54 and its inhabitants. So like in my mind, like I had this very rich fantasy life. I was friends with Brooke Shields and like Andy Warhol, and I was hanging out with all these people. And I think it was that like very vivid fantasy life in hindsight was creative visualization, because it all, like a lot of stuff that I used to fantasize about kind of manifested. But that's what I used to think. I was like, you know what? Like, I don't know how I'm going to make it happen. I don't know what's going to get me there. You know, at the time I thought, okay, I have to be an actor, but that's going to be my world. That's where I belong. I need to be there. And when I was 17, I stole my dad's credit card and I took the bus to New York City alone. And I told him I was going camping with my friend's family. Wow. And I came to New York City alone at 17. You know, and I was walking up and down Christopher Street. And I mean, it was, you know, and I felt like that was these were my people. Like I belonged there, even at 17.
Wow. So what was the world like in Montreal? Was it like, was it very straight? Did you have any like glimmer of creativity or like, was it about sports? What was the vibe?
There was not much going on. You know, yeah. It was economically kind of, you know, not thriving. There's a lot of political issues in Quebec.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had a little group of like creative friends, and, you know, we started modeling very early at 17. Right. And we did these fashion shows in the malls. And so that was like our big creative outlet.
I love that. So you get to New York. How are you able to stay in the States? Does it become a visa problem at some point?
No, my dad's American.
So there it is. How did he find out you stole his credit card? How did that all?
Well, he gave it to me.
Okay.
I said, I'm going camping with like, you know, Joe Schmo and his family.
Right on.
He's like, here, take this in case you need it for anything. And, you know, and there was all these charges at like B. Altman's. And,
right
like,
on.
Yeah.
And when did you come to L.A.?
I moved to L.A. I lived in, so that 17, I spent like a week in New York, a whole week. And then I went back and then I spent the next 3 years just plotting my return to the U.S. And then I moved back to New York and I lived there for, let me think of it. Okay. So I lived in New York for 4 years, from 88 to 92. And then I moved to L.A. and I was in L.A. from 92 to 2002.
Yeah.
I moved back to New York. But that's where I kind of, you know, grew into my own, you know, and was in L.A. And that's where I started shooting. I moved to L.A. to become an actor. You know, I thought that was the path that was going to get me there. But
right.
Then I started shooting. I got that camera and I became consumed with it. And my whole trajectory changed and I became like a photographer instead. And then since I was in L.A., that's when I started going to the gym and asking people to, you know, Tracy Lords was one of the people that I asked if I could photograph, and it panned out. We're still friends today.
She was one of my earliest interviews for Detour Magazine. Funny enough, Tracy Lords. Yeah, we had we crossed a lot of those threads. You and I. It's funny because when you look at your work, the Studio 54 thing doesn't surprise me because there's a glamorousness to your work. Like it's a little heightened, a little shiny, a little disco-y. What's the shoot where you felt like, oh, this is my Studio 54 Nirvana moment? Like, are there moments that come to mind in your career where you really felt like that was the aesthetic that you captured?
It's usually the latest thing that I do, you know,
that you're excited about.
That, you know, like it's like the last thing. Like I just did this shoot with Erika Jane in LA, and I had like 10 bodybuilders all oiled up. I mean, it was just. I mean, it, you know, it sounds typical, but it was really beautiful. Like it just looks magical the way I lit it and everything. So like I have the images up on my desktop and I just keep looking at them because I love them so much. So, you know, it's usually like that's the thing with me. When I work on something, I go through the whole arc of like, oh, this is amazing. But then I get tired of it and I need to move on to the next thing. So I don't like, I'm not nostalgic about like old stuff that way. Oh, I was really fond of that shoot. I mean, I look at old stuff and, you know, I appreciate it and I, you know, I'm proud of it, but I don't, I don't feel connected to it in any particular way.
You were able to keep moving on. Yeah, that's cool.
The whole Vanessa Williams thing is like, you know, it's ongoing, you know, so.
The Vanessa-sance is just getting underway. I've got to get better at saying it if it's going to roll off the tongue. Vanessa-sance. Yeah, that's how it's not the Vanessa-sance. It's the Vanessa-sance.
Vanessa-sance.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. You said it right. I think that's it. Yes, that's it. If we practice it, we can nail it. I think
it's four syllables.
Thank you. Vanessa-sance. Yes, welcome to the Vanessa-sance. I'm all about it. I read the profile of you in Out Magazine from a few years ago, and you talked about how you felt like you were kind of hard on yourself when you were younger. Like you looking back, that you would have been more kind to yourself. Is that fair to say? Is that did I pick up that right from the article?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, but then, you know, like, but then I go through, you know, then I vacillate between, like, if I wasn't hard on myself, would I just become complacent? And,
right,
you know,
would you?
And not, like, I don't, like, I have no regrets about how I was or how I needed to process things. Because I feel like so fortunate, you know, like I feel so fortunate, like, at the way that everything's turned out in my life, that I shudder actually at the thought of like going back in time, you know, like the time machine movies where they go back into one thing and it affects the whole universe moving forward. Like that's what I'm terrified of. Like if I were to go back and like say one little nice thing to my younger self, like the whole universe would have changed for me.
Right.
That terrifies me.
Yeah. There's no Vanessa-sance if you do that.
No, none of it.
Do you have this moment? We're similar ages. We've been doing the same thing for a while. I was interviewing somebody the other day, and somebody, I think I talked about this on the podcast. I was interviewing Jennifer Love Hewitt for a EPK thing, a short interview. And I knew her back in the 90s. We did big magazine profiles for Detour and stuff. And during the setup, she looked at me and she goes, "We're still here." And I almost started crying. I found it so moving. But do you ever think that? Do you ever think, like, I'm still doing this? It's something about this time or where I'm at in my life. I just find that idea of still being here very moving. When I went and saw the Madonna concert and she's still there, I kind of can't get over it in a way.
Mm-hmm. That song Land of the Living by Christine W.
Yeah.
I've always loved that song, but I put it back on my playlist in the past couple of months because that's what it's about. It's about like, you know, like you're still standing and this whole Vanessa Williams, you know, thing. Like, yeah, I mean, you know, and thriving too, you know, I mean, again, I feel really grateful because, you know, some people have an arc or, you know, they have a pinnacle in their career and then it kind of, you know, and I've had ebbs and flows, but like, I feel like, you know, there's been some consistency, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
And it continues, you know what I mean? And I think it's, I don't know. What is that a testament to? Like our tenacity or? I think it's
Little resilience for sure.
Resilience, but also like our like, I think it's like an indication of like how you feel about your life and how you feel about yourself. And like, I feel pretty good about things now. So like, I don't get downtrodden, like, oh, I could have been this, or I could have been better, or that could have been better. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, I'm still hustling. You know, I have a bunch of other things going on. You know, I have the magazine. I'm working on a show that I don't want to talk too much about that I'm going to start pitching over the summer. But, yeah, so, like, I'm like, I keep getting, like, these third and fourth and fifth waves of.
Yeah. And I'm still very excited about the work, and I try as hard or harder than I used to. Like you were talking about, oh, I have this idea for a set, and there's a part of you that's like, oh, it's not going to be worth it. You're not going to get paid. No, I try harder. I spend more money. Like that is,
because you realize that's not what it's about.
Yeah.
It's about the satisfaction that you get out of doing something amazing.
Right. And it really is like, oh, is it going to be worth it? Yeah. Cause I want to do it. Like I still have that. It's just interesting. Yeah. When you were, you know, when you would have your ups and downs, what kind of kept you going when you were down? Like what would get you up again? Was that just part of your personality?
I mean, there were things that got me down, you know, when my mom died in 1998, like I got like that really threw me for a loop for a couple of years. But then I came out of the fog, and then I was in a really bad relationship that kind of took me down, and I came out of that fog. So, you know, my baseline is up here. Do you know what I mean? So the stuff that took me down wasn't going to keep me down. It was just a temporary thing. It was always going to be a temporary thing. So that's what kept me going is like, you know, 'cause I've always had this like really aggressive need to succeed and, or not succeed. Like it's not about like making money or being famous or whatever. It's about like feeling good about what I'm doing. So like I always had the need to do, you know, to feel good about what I'm doing.
Right.
And when there was those times where I wasn't feeling good about it, I figured out ways to do it. And that's, it looks like you want to say something, but let me just get this one thought out. Is that, and I think you're a lot like this, is when you start feeling like people like us who are self-starters, we have to be self-starters. You kind of develop that skill. Like, so when things are not going right, you know, it's not like you're in an office job. Like you have to be creative and you have to be innovative and being in a freelance sort of, type job, that becomes second nature to you, is just thinking outside of the box and figuring out new ways of making things happen and making things work. And I think that's like how I keep, you know, kind of keeping things fresh. And
you seem like a naturally optimistic person. Would you describe yourself as an optimist?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would. I mean, I feel like my photography is kind of optimistic. That's how I describe it, is.
Yeah.
Hopeful and optimistic, and
I love that. Yeah. And you're married, right?
Just recently divorced.
Oh, but very shit. Amicably. They're very amicably divorced. You consciously uncoupled.
We did. It was, yeah. I mean, he was here earlier today. He was, you know, we have the dog in common, so
sure,
we co-parent, and you know, we're still very, very amicable. It was just a metamorphosis in the relationship.
Yeah, that's how it goes. These things happen. You have some merch on your website, cool shirts and things like that, that you've done sexy photos for. What's your bestseller?
The one of me.
The one of you, right on.
I haven't.
Is it the one of you in these little shorts, right? They're just like little leather shorts. Is that right?
No, it was, wait, what is it? Oh, it's right here. Do I have time to go get it?
Yes, go get it. I love a show and tell moment. Yeah.
Okay, hold on. I'm coming. Okay, I'm back. It was this one. Like this one I've reprinted a million times.
Okay, it's the mic for the audience not watching this. It says mic and it's you with
I'm actually not really, I mean, I might kind of resume pushing all this stuff, but right now it's kind of not really. But these, like, I've sold, like, thousands of those t-shirts.
That's exciting. And you also did this really cool Tom of Finland shoot where you body painted the people. And the images are stunning. How hard was that?
It was hard. It was, like, 9 hours of body painting.
Amazing.
It was hard on the models.
Yeah.
It took me 3 minutes to shoot it. But
but it really turned out cool. And then you would see them, like, moving. And you're like, oh, I thought that was a cartoon. Like, it was really, really... really effective. Do you remember the first images of sexy men that you saw growing up? Like those things that kind of capture your imagination. Yeah. I was like a disco kid, like so 80s or like 70s guys, Gregory Harrison, Willie Ames, like that kind of Battle of the Network Stars, Speedos. Like what were the guys that turned you on?
Patrick Duffy from Men from Atlantis.
Sure.
I had the total hots for him. And then, you know, my dad used to have bodybuilding magazines, and I was like 8 or 9, and I would lay them all out on my bed, and I get this feeling in the pit of my stomach, and I, you know, and I didn't know what it was. Like my parents would come in the room, and they'd have all these magazines out, and I think that was like their first indication. Like I would just have them all open on my bed, and I'd just be staring at them, and you know, they made me feel a certain way.
Yeah.
In hindsight, it's only years later I developed shame about it. but back then, that's how I got my, you know, my mental rocks off.
Right. Well, it explains a lot in terms of your aesthetic and also your own fitness and stuff like that. It feels like it's part of the same continuum. So, Mike, before I let you go, tell people how they can find your stuff or anything else you want to promote.
I mean, you could pretty much see everything that I'm doing and kind of tap into all of the charity stuff and all the show busy stuff that I do on my Instagram page, which is at Mike Ruiz One, all spelled out.
Right, because there's two Mike Ruiz Instagrams.
There's five, actually.
There's five.
Three of them are under my dog's names.
Oh, okay.
And I reviewed those to help save dogs.
Yeah.
And then I got kicked off of Instagram, so I started a backup account.
Yeah.
And then my main account got reinstated, so I kept the second account. And then I just started a third private account where I just post like goofy stuff.
Yeah.
It's just like personal stuff.
Yeah.
Like my public page is all like work stuff, but my at Mike Ruiz One, all spelled out, and the number one.
Yeah.
That's like my private sexy
one. That's your main one. Why did you get kicked off Instagram? Too hot?
I think it's because I did, for 2 years I was doing a Leatherman project.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I was photographing active members of the Leather and Fetish community.
Right.
And it was beautiful portraits. It wasn't like salacious or anything.
Yeah, no, they're beautiful. They're just like straight on and they're very striking. Yeah.
But I did a corresponding video, and the video was a little racy. It was not racy. It was just guys being affectionate with each other and
yeah.
guys kissing. And, you know, I have a feeling that somebody, you know.
Couldn't handle it.
Because they said I violated community standards and, you know, they never can tell you what that is exactly. I'm like, how did I do it? And they're like, you violated. So, you know, they have their canned responses. But anyway, so I got that page reinstated, so. That's that.
Good
so
for
anyway,
you.
Long and part of it. Everyone can just check out my Instagram.
Your
pages.
Instagram. And also Photobook is your online magazine that you started to get out.
Photobookmagazine.com. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can check it out. You know, we're very proud of it. You know, the fact that we're sustainable and inclusive and diverse and we're ethical. We never shoot fur, feathers or exotic skins because that's animal cruelty. So, you know, we're you know, we like to think we are a little fashiony glamour magazine with a conscience.
I love it. It's beautiful. There are two names on my sheet that I forgot to ask you about. One is because I'm obsessed with them. Alan Ritchson. He's the actor mm-hmm. from Reacher. He wasn't really on my radar until like a month or two ago. And then I just did a deep dive in his Instagram and I'm like, this guy, he's super hunky and hot, but he also sings and he's religious. He does church on Instagram. Like, talk to me about Alan Ritchson.
And he hates Trump. Like, what more can you ask for in a man?
Yeah, he hates Trump. He's delicious.
He's intimidating. Like, you know, I don't get like nervous around, but I mean, he's 6'4" and 250 pounds of like, and he just walks in and he's like so beautiful. You know what I mean? Like, it's so, like you can't process it. And, you know, this big wall of a man walks in, but he's like super chill, you know,
yeah.
like within a few minutes, he's like, you know.
Well, he's a little sassy. Like he's little, like he feels like he's got gay friends or something. You feel like he'd be right at home at a brunch, you know, discussing Kylie. I don't know. There's something about his humor I find endearing. The other name.
Really cool. I like him a lot. He's a really cool guy.
I love to hear that. The other name on your bio that struck out to me, Adam Schiff. There was a flag thing, like a cool thing that happened. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, somebody from his office. I mean, it's not like he's, you know, trolling Instagram looking
right.
for people to honor.
Right.
But somebody in his office was aware of me and stuff that I was doing and reached out to me and asked me if I'd be a willing recipient of this thing that they do where they fly a flag over the state capitol. And then they take it down and they pack it up and they send it to you with a certificate. So it's basically like they're honoring people for various things. And they sent that to me for the, you know, for my advocacy in the LGBTQ community.
That's amazing. And this was flown over the state capitol or
the U.S. Capitol.
U.S. Capitol. Wow. That's very cool. And you have
a certificate that says, you know, like by the order of Adam Schiff.
Yeah.
Of, you know,
Shifty Shift served it up for you. That's awesome. I love it. All right, Mike, this has been so fun to talk to you. I just think you're great, and I'm so happy we reconnected.
Me too.
Always, over the years, you always seem nice. You always put a smile on my face. I always love seeing your work. Here's my final question. How would you describe your point of view as a creative person? Like, what are the qualities that you try to espouse?
Hopefulness, you know, yeah. Like I'm optimistic. So I try to impart that into my creative point of view and my point of view in general. You know, it kind of keeps me afloat and also inspires me to do a very specific kind of work. Not only, you know, photography wise, but just across the board. Like, I feel like everything that I do has a hope infused in it somehow. And it wasn't like a conscious effort. Like, I'm going to be the hope photographer.
You right.
know? Like, it just, I was doing it. I mean, it was a form of escaping. So like, I basically created a visual world that I needed to see to skirt my, you know, my reality.
Right.
So I created this whole alternate reality. And in hindsight, I realized that I was kind of creating, you know, like hope for myself and therefore for other people. And that sort of like spilled into other things that I do.
I love that. That's really beautiful. Thank you for this conversation. I'm so happy to see you again.
Thank you, Dennis. And I will be talking to you plenty again soon off to the side.
Awesome. And may the carry on with the Vanessa-sance. Let the Vanessa-sance begin. Please, you could tell her we're calling it that. Please tell her. Text her right now and say we've come up with a word for what this is, Vanessa-sance. Although people
hashtag Vanessa-sance.
Yes, although people might think it's Renaissance, Beyonce, but I don't think so. It's more like the McConaissance. It's like the Vanessa-sance. Yeah, I love it.
We'll get it.
Thanks again to Mike Ruiz. Check out the Vanessa Williams video Legs wherever you watch videos at. And you can also follow him on Instagram. And his website is MikeRuiz.com. Got a lot of stuff going on. The photo book, all of it. Check it out. All right. So this happened. All right. I mentioned in the interview that I started taking this jazz dance class recently. I don't know, the last month and a half, 2 months. And it's taught by a guy named Michael Rooney, who I remember when I first came to LA to pursue performing. I took his class sometimes, but he was sort of an idol. Like, I remember going to this one recital that he choreographed, and just his work was so beautiful. He's Mickey Rooney's son. I knew that. And he teaches this class, like Jazz Over 40, for people right here in North Hollywood, close to me. And the reason I know about it is I have another friend named Fred Tallickson, who is an Emmy-nominated choreographer. And I met him when I first moved to LA in the late 80s, 90s. And we like to go to dance class sometimes together. And the other, I don't know, back in November, I think it was, I got a text from Fred and he wrote, "The last time." That's all he wrote in the text. And I didn't know what he meant by that. It was just an out of nowhere text. And then he wrote underneath it, "I'll tell you later." So I call him later and I was like, what did you mean by that? And he goes, I was just in Michael Rooney's Jazz Over 40 class. And at the end of class, he played your song The Last Time. So Michael Rooney played a song from my album from 2000 in his dance class. It's like this ballad, this kind of sweeping ballad. There's a big guitar solo in it. It's like my barn burner ballad. Anyway, he played it in his class. So he knew my music from way back then, and he used it in his class. And Fred was there, and he texted me. So I was like, oh, Michael's still teaching? I want to take his class. And so I put it on my dream board, like you do, and I started taking it a few months ago. Saturday mornings, Thursday afternoons, I even took a master class that he did that was longer, and it was a Beyonce combo, and it was barefoot, and it was so much fun and challenging. Anyway, I've gotten really into it. So a couple weeks ago, we're in this class, and between the warm-up and the combo, he walks around to the class, and he goes, "I've got a soft announcement, everybody." And he goes, "I have a friend who used to be one of my assistants when I would choreograph, who is now a dance agent, and she is looking for mature dancers because they get a lot of calls for mature dancers for commercials and things like that. And so she's going to come to class next week. And if you're interested in being considered, like if you would want to go out and audition for those kinds of things, you know, she's going to be here. No pressure. That's just kind of what's happening." And so I was like, there's an agent coming next week. So, I show up to class next week and, I tear some shit up and long story short, I just got an email saying, if you want to set up a time to talk about representation. So at 59 and a half, I may get a dance agent, and I'll be a dancing bottle of Boniva. I don't give a shit. So that may be happening. The point is, dreams can still come true. And the funny thing is, I could never get an agent back in the day when I was trying, you know, when I'd come out here and was trying to be that music video person or whatever it was. So that's wild. And I have to say, dancing in that class has been really thrilling. Like, it's amazing what your body remembers, like some of that style stuff. Like, I'm just like really gratified that I can kind of still do it in a way. I'm not injured-ish. I'm like not injured. Like, I have friends that are like, their backs would never let them do that, something like that. And I don't know. We'll see what happens. But there you go. A chain of events, a dream board. And the next thing you know, we're going to be dancing to Vanessa Williams' legs as part of the ongoing Vanessa-sance. It's really rolling off the tongue now, and that makes me feel really good. All right, that's enough for this week. Watch for me on your Ozempic commercials. I may be wearing a weird outfit or whatever. I could be like the cable guy that busts a move. I don't know. We'll see what happens with that. In the meantime, I want to thank Oscar Rosario for mixing the episodes. Also, my theme music is my Bark Daniels for placement music. We'll catch you next time on Dennis Anyone. Bye!